Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. Many roadside and garden flowers already have passed their prime and have gone to seed. Others, like teasels, yellow and purple coneflowers, yarrow, Queen Anne's lace, chicory, and countless other native and non-native plants, are reaching their peak and are displaying a rainbow of colors for us. Still more plant species like Joe Pye weed, goldenrod, and the wide variety of asters have nearly attained their height and are forming buds that will add a new palette of color to our August and September landscapes. Plants have evolved countless ways of guaranteeing that their species will continue by developing various means of seed disposal and ensure survival. There basically are five common ways that seeds may be transported to environments favorable for their growth: by wind, water, gravity, ballistic methods, where seeds are ejected by forceful and often explosive mechanisms, and via animals, which of course includes human animals. In some cases, fire may be a dispersal method. The heat from fire can crack seed coats, allowing water and oxygen to enter, or smoke from fires can trigger germination. Lodgepole pine is one example in the U.S. I'm sure most of us may look at the seed heads of many of our roadside and garden plants and easily can determine how they ensure next spring's generation. Let's consider just a few examples of each of the techniques. Wind scatters maple keys in spring, as well as the fluff-topped seeds of dandelions, hawkweed, and scores of others in their Asteraceae or Aster family of plants. The seeds typically have a fluffy structure called a pappus attached to the seed itself, which acts like a parachute and floats on the wind currents. This dispersal type can effectively spread seed far and wide. Recently, I was in an area where cottonwood trees were releasing their tiny seeds on bits of fluff. Cottonwood often grows along streams and other bodies of water, which brings us to our next dispersal method. Many marine, beach, pond, and swamp plants have waterborne seeds, which are enclosed in a corky substance, or fruits containing air, or both, that make them buoyant. Some examples include cranberries, water plantain, water lilies, yellow flag, sea kale, sea rocket, sea beet, and such trees as silver birch, willow, and, of course, coconuts. Cattails and other bulrushes have lightweight seeds that may be scattered by wind or water. Waterfowl also may transport seeds from one pond to another in the mud on their feet. Of course, numerous plants simply rely on gravity. The seeds of nut and fruit trees are included here, but these also are frequently dispersed by animals of all kinds, not only by being buried and forgotten by squirrels and chipmunks, but also by the fruits being consumed and their seeds deposited in the manure or scat of various animals. And we cannot forget the lowly but very industrious ants. They are responsible for the spread of many of our native spring ephemeral wildflowers, such as trillium, wild ginger, spring beauties, violets, and many more. The workers collect the seeds and carry them back to the nest, where the outer coverings, called elaiosomes, are rich in oils, proteins, and sugars, and are eaten by the ants, and then the seed itself is disposed of away from the nest. There's an insect called the head-clipping weevil, whose activity I have observed in my garden on various coneflowers for some years, and on the flowers of cup plant just a few days ago. The adult female cuts the stem just beneath a flower, not quite all the way through, but enough that the flower essentially is hanging by a thread. She then lays some eggs in the flower. As the cut flower desiccates over a few ensuing days, it eventually falls to the ground, where the larvae then hatch out and burrow into the ground, where they will mature into adult weevils. I removed a number of these clipped flower heads that I found still dangling atop my cup plant and disposed of these in the trash. If you take a walk along the wide mowed paths at OSU's 11-acre Prairie Nature Center on the campus here in Marion, you likely will observe clipped heads on the variety of sunflowers and coneflowers that grow there. Just remember to check yourself and your dog, if you happen to have one as a companion, for ticks, as well as for burrs and other aptly named seeds like tick trefoil, beggar ticks, stick tights, and Hekelia or Virginia stick seed that may hitch a free ride on you or your pet. Ballistic seed dispersal is a method undertaken by many common garden and waste area weeds. Hairy bittercress is one such prolific seed producer that I mentioned in one segment in very early spring. The seed pod is called a silique and can contain up to 30 seeds. As it matures, two valves coil within the seed pod that allows the silique to explode at the slightest touch by human or animal or even just the wind, propelling seeds up to 16 feet. No wonder it is one of the banes of gardeners. Another example of ballistic seed dispersal is found in a woodland native genus of plants that is blooming now and soon will be ripening its seed capsules. Jewelweed, or wild impatience, related to the garden plants of the same name, as well as balsam. I happen to have the yellow species in our yard. Often its orange cousin is seen in the woods. Both species are grazed by deer. Perhaps because it's such a succulent plant, it may help to allay thirst. It's fun to introduce people who are not aware of its seed-scattering mechanism to the technique that it uses. When the capsules are mature but still green, if one places one's thumb and finger gently upon a capsule as if to pick it, you will feel the seed move like a tiny live animal as the pod coils, spring-like, to expel the seeds. I have seen grown people jump back, startled, and then reach out for more ripe capsules to feel the odd sensation again. Needless to say, kids are delighted to learn this trick about jewelweed. The best thing about the plant, however, is that it's a remedy for poison ivy, and often may be found growing right next to it. As I mentioned a moment ago, ants move seeds around, and animals, including birds, eat fruits, later depositing the undigested seeds here and there, wrapped in a small supply of fertilizer, if you get my drift. But all sorts of animals help move around the many kinds of seeds that stick to fur and feathers and clothing. My brother and I used to throw burdock burrs at one another, much to the annoyance of our mom, who usually found a few still stuck in our clothes when she sorted the laundry. Since we're discussing the spread of plants, including those spread by human animals, I want to discuss a couple of non-native ornamental plants that came from abroad, and that I cautiously have allowed in my garden and also in the bookworm garden at the Marion Public Library. I've been tending the garden there for a number of years now, removing or adding different plants as time goes on. It's a registered monarch way station, a designation that does not require that all of the plants in such a garden be native, but in addition to being attractive and beneficial to a wide assortment of pollinators, I want the garden also to be attractive to human visitors. The majority of the species there are native to the U.S., if not strictly to Ohio, and I try to include a variety of colorful plants, shapes, and textures. I also have added plant labels, so if you see a plant that you think might be suitable for your own garden, you will know what to look for. Of course, the native plants you see here, and hundreds more, may be found at the nursery of my co-host, Gail Martin. July is a wonderful time to visit Natives in Harmony, not only to purchase plants, but to appreciate the extensive prairie and other plantings that Gail has surrounding her greenhouses and her home. You will get a lot of ideas for how to landscape your own yard, or just go to enjoy watching the myriad insects fluttering all over those colorful prairie plants. One of the non-native plants in the bookworm garden that I referred to, and have likely mentioned in previous broadcasts, is Verbena bonariensis. This interesting plant is native to Brazil and Argentina. The specific name, bonariensis, refers to Buenos Aires. The plants were first grown as garden ornamentals in 1726 by Englishmen James and William Sherard, who obtained the seeds from a dried specimen that was sent back to England from Buenos Aires. I first came across it about 20 years ago when I gave a presentation as a master gardener at a plant nursery in western Pennsylvania when we lived there. Master gardeners are volunteers, and we never accept payment for our appearances, but the nursery owner insisted I accept a cell pack of the plants when she saw how much I admired the mature ones that she had growing there. I planted the Verbena barnariensis in my garden, and I have grown some each year since. No one seems to have decided on a single common name, possibly the most apt of which is stick verbena. This describes its growth habit of having a minimal amount of foliage and long, bare, square stems 3.5 to 4 feet tall, topped by clusters of tiny purple flowers that wave in the breeze. It's also been called Brazilian or purple top vervain, cluster top vervain, Argentinian vervain, or simply pretty verbena. My friend in Minnesota, Mary, eschews all of those, preferring simply to call it by its botanical initials, VB. With its requirement for the warm soils of its native land where it evolved, it never appears from seed nor as a returning perennial in our area until quite late in the spring. But once it does appear, seedlings will continue to pop up all over the place in my yard throughout the summer and in the bookworm garden, for it also seems to be attractive to finches, which scatter it around as they feed on those and the many sunflowers there as well, which also plant themselves. I added stick verbena to the bookworm garden since it attracts many butterflies and other pollinating insects, and in the fall I'll often see painted lady butterflies fluttering on the flower clusters. I recently read, though, that this plant has escaped cultivation in the southeast U.S. and in California, and has become naturalized in disturbed areas, causing it to be added to watch lists or even invasive species lists in several states. It is drought and heat tolerant, and as such apparently has become very common along roadsides and other disturbed areas in our milder climates. Not too many years ago, this plant was considered hardy only to Zone 7, but for a number of years now, I have found that, in addition to the new seedlings in late spring, I'll always have a few of these plants return as perennials, both in our yard and in the bookworm garden. So while it hasn't yet established itself in the wild in Ohio, because it does reseed vigorously and is becoming adapted to our local climate, I think it is a species that we need to keep a wary eye on. Rose campion, Silene coronaria, is another non-native plant that I introduced into the bookworm garden. It is native from central and southeastern Europe to northern Iran, Central Asia, and the western Himalayas, where it may be found along roadsides, fields, clearings, or rocky areas. The genus Silene has a beautiful native in Ohio, Silene regia, or royal catchfly, but I've not yet managed to add this beautiful red flowering plant to the garden. Rose campion's fuzzy foliage is a distinctive pale greenish white. The sticky hairs that cover the leaves discourage ants and other insects, as well as deer, from eating the plant. This short-lived perennial produces bright fuchsia flowers on stiff, upright stems that grow to about 2.5 feet high or so in its second year and complement the foliage nicely. While the flowers have no scent, the nectar is enjoyed by butterflies and bees. Like the stick verbena, it will self-sow prodigiously. So it's a good idea to remove the flowers just as they are fading, since once the pods dry, the seed scatters like salt from a shaker. Any seed that remains in the ground over winter will present you in late spring with many little rose campion plants, but their distinctive woolly gray-green foliage is easy to spot, and since it is pretty shallow-rooted, this potential invasive is not at all difficult to control in the garden, or will transplant easily to other places that you may want it. There is so very much to talk about this time of year. This is Carol Kelly saying, keep your weeds pulled and your flowers deadheaded, because Mother Nature always will keep them replenished and then some, here in the Green Outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.